Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Life has moved along a bit since the 1980s, but some concepts that originated then remain fresh. In 1989, urban sociologist Ray Oldenburg wrote The Great Good Place. He coined the term third places, or local spots such as cafes, coffee shops, bookstores, bars, and barber shops that were not work, not home, but somewhere to informally gather and socialize.
He made a case for such places, arguing that they're essential to community and civic engagement, and he identified the characteristics of a good third place. Oldenburg is now professor emeritus at the University of West Florida, and he explains that these establishments are as essential today as they were in the 80s and 90s.
He spoke with Lake Effect's Mayon Silver from Pensacola and explained how he first got interested in place-driven urban sociology.
I was trained in a school of sociology called symbolic interactionism. And the basic idea is that reality is what you and I agree on when we talk to one another. I just rebelled against this because there's a hard physical world out there, and it dictates what we can do, things we can do and things we can't do. And so I just jumped ship and got into that. And I was, of course, inspired by the deficiencies of the modern suburb. I just couldn't believe this kind of place was desirable. For example, there is, in all of these places, a large and useless and expensive front lawn. There is no place to get together on the corner. Every place on the corner now is a private residence. I thought of this originally in terms of working people. You know, you have your home and you have your place of work. I was, for a long time, in that shuttle when I first came to town here when the opening of the university. So I had home life, and I had the university, and I shuttled back and forth, and it was not something I liked. And then one day, I happened to be driving by the same bakery all the time, Krell's Bakery, and it had four or five picture windows, and I saw the same people in there every morning, so I decided to stop. And by the third visit, I was a regular there, and I knew all the guys, and they all knew me, and it just made life bearable. That was my introduction to the real third place. Unfortunately, it doesn't exist anymore, but for years I went there.
What were some of the things that you noticed about this bakery, like that it was doing for you in your life?
Well, first of all, life became easier. At the time I was driving a Oldsmobile Cutlass, and the alternator was faulty, and the guy said, "Hey, just bring it around tomorrow." And so while I'm in there having coffee, the guy pops my hood, puts in a new alternator, so on. Then one of the guys had a big tree that was giving him a problem, so my skill with a chainsaw came across. And so we were doing things for one another. Helpful things.
And is that where you found all of your characteristics of a good third place, from that spot?
No. For example, one of the things I learned when Hurricane Andrew hit the southern part of the state, people need help, and the officialdom is rather slow to help. In situations like that, they need help immediately. So you had a lot of able-bodied men down there that wanted to get together, but they had no place to meet. There was no staging area, so to speak, and so that became, in my mind, one of the important functions of a third place.
And what are some of the other characteristics of a good third place?
Well, where neighborhoods have them, first of all, they are a port of entry, which is to say, oh, I think the average American changes residence on an average of about 12 times throughout his or her life. And when you get into a new neighborhood, if there is a third place there, it is a port of entry. It's a place where you can get to know all about the neighborhood rather quickly and get to know a lot of people who live in the neighborhood, and it's all very helpful. In the typical modern suburb, there are no such places. And of course, the overdone emphasis on American individualism gets a big help from this, because people do not get together in these places.
Well, you noticed that back when you wrote the book, back in the 80s, you said that the course of urban growth and development in the United States has been hostile to an informal public life. And
yes.
Yeah, and you know, some of the things you probably saw popping up in the 80s and 90s, like if you could talk about subdivisions, strip malls, chain stores, and the change in how we consume movies and TV, where did this movement come from?
Well, let's first of all say a little bit about our major cities. In the beginning, what were the downtowns really like? And there were taverns galore. And if you go down there today, there will be large banks, there will be tall buildings, oftentimes with no easy access to the several floors that they have. And it's not conducive to public life, not at all. And why is urban planning gone this direction? And my suspicion is the economy. The American economy depends on people, all of us, spending money for things that we don't need but are conditioned to want. Well, look at the happiness studies. In order of priority, what makes people happy? The top of the list is getting together with friends and having a good time. Number two is sex, and then it goes down, down, down. Television is not on the list at all. But we have become extremely reliant on television because we live such isolated lives. If people have these places and regularly get together with their friends and are enjoying life, the need for these to consume, the need to shop, it just isn't there anymore.
Well, with these trends in public life, do you see any cause for optimism in American cities and communities?
Let me tell you a little thing about a friend of mine, a very, very good friend of mine, who he was a helicopter instructor at Whiting Field. And he decided one day to quit. And the major thing was what happened to the ready room. The ready room was where the guys would get together and laugh and have a good time. Last time he went into the reading room, there were 10 people there. Four of them were playing cards, and six of them were looking at an object in their left hand. Nobody was talking. There you go.
The cell phone, yes.
Cell phones and
laptops. Well,
yep.
So, you know, moving it back to the third place and the concept, you know, so when you discussed a third place and how much it brings to the community, conversation was a main factor. Conversation is the main activity in these places.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
What do you see in today's third places like coffee shops and cafes and things? What was it that conversation is the main activity brought, and what is it that we're lacking today?
Right now, my latest manuscript is hopefully will sell as a book, and it's called The Joy of Tippling. And what I'm recommending, this is my fourth book, and I normally don't get any real criticism, but this one will reap it, because I am promoting the habitual use of a moderate amount of alcohol. Why? Because it brings people together. It brings people together. There are only 5 states in the union now, and where the number of bars is increasing, and in all the rest they're decreasing. And anyway, that's the bar. Of course, is a great third place, and alcohol has a means of getting people together. It not only is there a place to drink, which brings people together, but the drink itself tends to warm people to one another.
Sort of like a Cheers bar type situation, you know, in that television show. Do you think that modern society is conducive to something like that, or that people tend to would abuse the alcohol have negative consequences?
Well, alcohol, you know, the majority of stuff written about alcohol in America is negative. It's just designed to protect you from alcohol, and the great majority of people who use alcohol do not have a problem with it.
Well, alcohol is kind of a social lubricant. Like it makes people more relaxed and helps them talk to each other potentially, right?
Yeah.
Well, there were other factors that you noticed when you were writing The Great Good Place about a third place being a leveler where everyone can come in and that there's some sort of a playful mood, you know?
Oh, sure, sure, yeah. And absolutely, the idea of it being a leveler is extremely important because, you know, you in a good third place, you will find people from disparate walks of life, different social strata, and everyone is really equal.
In relation to the playful mood that a third place should have, do you think that today's political climate is kind of the most extreme challenge to the civility and playfulness that we've ever had in the United States?
The hate mongers have managed to cause rift within my own family. We have two children. They're, you know, grown children now, but they are not on speaking terms anymore because one listens to one speaker and the other doesn't, and it's so sad.
In recent years, have you come across any third places where there's still a vibrant and active conversation, connection, community background happening?
Yeah, right now we have first of all, Pensacola in the last 7 or 8 years has come to life. And the downtown is very active at night. And right now I'm thinking of a pizza place we have that is the epitome of a third place. Everybody there gets along. And I don't know about the politics of everybody, but you always have to wonder if everybody is getting along, does that mean they're all basically progressive people? Or I don't know, and I have no way of finding out, but there are good places, yes.
How do you feel about having been so ahead of your time, you know, in the sense of coming up with these concepts and that it's still so current today, that these are still things that we need to improve upon and value?
Well, I'm kind of amazed. You know, the idea of a third place is, to me, such a simple idea. You know, that I can't understand in a way why it's to so many people it's a revelation. You know, what it means to me is that so many people are living and don't know how to improve the quality of their lives, it's all a mystery to me. You know, to me this is so simple and so clear, but to so many it isn't. And then the people who plan cities, I don't see much attention given to it, quite frankly.
Well, you know, and you wrote in the preface to A Great Good Place that the first requirement of a good community is that one need not be a member of it. So, you know, in a non-totalitarian society, in a free society, people have the right to go to wherever places they want to go. They have a right to frequent. They have a right not to frequent. And you said that public life and a vital community, these concepts are lost on some people, but it's not surprising that they're not lost on more of us, so that a lot of us do find the need for that. So do you think that also encapsulates today's society?
Well, the need is always there. And, you know, when I started stopping at Krell's, I will tell you honestly, I never had a bad day after that. You know, and when you're in a new university, brand new university, there are so many mediocre scholars trying to jockey for administrative positions with more money, and it's just not a great place. And then along with that, it's my first experience in a modern suburb where you have to get in the car for everything.
Yeah.
And life wasn't coming together at all. And then when I stopped in there, I'm honest, I never had a totally bad day after that. God, those guys were so great.
That's so cool. That is absolutely so cool. A side note, I mean, it takes a little bit of courage to become like sort of a regular at a place, to kind of go there and engage with people. How would you suggest that people get this courage or find the right spot for themselves?
Well, first of all, you have to have a certain attitude about time. I've had older guys tell me, I used to think you guys sitting there laughing with one another and sipping your coffee, I used to think you were wasting time. And some of these people, these men particularly, just don't understand. You know, if you have that attitude that every time you sit down at a coffee counter, you're wasting time, that's an impediment. That really is an impediment.
Yeah, or if you just go with your laptop and put your headphones on, then clearly you're in your own world and no one's going to want to talk to you.
Yes.
So you think people need to make the effort? That's all set aside the time and make the effort? Or is it more than that?
When the third place thrived in our culture, the majority of the regulars at it lived within no more than three blocks away from it. In walkable distance. Give you this context. Do you know anything about the use value of neighborhoods? Every day in the paper, in the newspaper, we get there's a house that is portrayed and described in favorable terms and so on and so forth. But the use value of the surrounding area is never mentioned. Now, what I mean by use value, is there something you can walk to that will be useful to you? And, of course, the answer is always no. There's no use value. So
I totally understand. You know, I live in an area of Milwaukee. It's near a university. It's right on the bus line. There's bookstore and movie theaters. And it just adds so much to the life, like the experience.
Yeah. Well, you live in a pretty good city.
Yeah.
You know, Milwaukee in the summertime, you get the impression that it's carnival on every day. Really?
I don't know if it's exactly like that here in Milwaukee, but I appreciate the sentiment.
Yeah.
Well,
you're doing fine there.
Yeah. So, Ray Oldenburg, I really appreciate it. I appreciate your work, and thanks for talking on Lake Effect.
Well, thank you for asking.
Ray Oldenburg is a professor emeritus at the University of West Florida and author of the book, The Great Good Place. He spoke with Lake Effect's Mayon Silver from his home in Pensacola.